The following program is a presentation of CRN Digital Talk Radio and Les Kincaid. And now it's time for Wines du Jour with your host, Chef Les Kincaid.
Thank you for joining us on Wines du Jour at Salute Trattoria Italia. That's at the Red Rock Resort and Casino in Summerlin, Nevada, where you should be. We're America's number one syndicated radio food and wine program. Bring you great information about good wines and great food each and every episode. Thanks for your inquiring emails sent from your home country from literally all around the world, from the East Coast, from the Left Coast, from Spain, from Baja California, and from Argentina. Just about everywhere. Welcome. Our in-house special invited guest audience is both hungry and thirsty, and we're pouring a little Prosecco as we speak to get the evening started. Our program broadcasts each week, remembering at each time we reflect on what we're all about, and that is, wine is food. A meal is a meal, but with a glass of wine, it's a celebration. From casual gatherings to formal affairs, wine celebrates any event. So if this is your first time listening to Wines du Jour, stay tuned. You need to know that we do not allow snobbery or intimidation in the room during the broadcast. Wines du Jour food and wine radio broadcast distributed in all 50 states, all around the world via radio, CRN Digital Talk Radio Network, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, AHA Radio, and on several internet systems all around the globe. And we're also available on podcast, free on iTunes, so listen to us also on Wonder Radio or Warp Radio. You're listening to Wines du Jour. I'm your host, Les Kincaid. So don't touch that dial. We'll be back with fun, information, and great taste right here on Wines du Jour. And remember, a meal without wine is called breakfast. But first, let's talk a little bit about this restaurant. This restaurant is located in the Red Rock Resort Casino in Summerlin, which is a beautiful place. If you haven't been out here, it's in the western part. It's Summerlin, I mentioned that. It's in the western part of the Las Vegas area. It's a beautiful facility, wonderful rooms, a number of great restaurants, and the one that we're in this evening is one of my favorite Italian restaurants in all of Las Vegas called Salute. And wait till you see what the chef has put together to pair with the wines that we're featuring this evening. In fact, tonight we're featuring Ruffino. That is the winery label out of Italy. And their wine, which is their bubbly, called Prosecco. Now, Prosecco is produced from a unique grape. You may or may not have ever heard of it, and that's okay. It doesn't make you good or doesn't make you bad. But I have to tell you that it's simply called, as soon as I find it, Glera. G-L-E-R-A. That's the name of the grape that makes Prosecco. Prosecco is generally, the grapes are grown in, for Prosecco in the northeastern part of Italy, around Venice and in that area. And Friuli, if you know where Friuli is, just south there. And the weather conditions are pretty good and stable year-round. So the grapes have an opportunity to grow. It's a white grape, in case you weren't familiar with it. Most people have never heard of it before. It's kind of a shame, but that's just one that doesn't get around. It's called Glera, and this is 100% Glera grape that makes the Prosecco, just so that you know. It retails for about $16, just about anywhere that sells sparkling wine or bubbly. And it's not expensive. Chilled, it is very, very good and goes with some pretty good things. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, I'll tell you some ideas I have to serve along with that and also what the chef has put together to pair with the Prosecco tonight. So we'll be back coast to coast and around the world on the internet right here on Wines du Jour at Red Rock in Summerlin.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're having a great time here at Salute. That's what they say when they get a little toast. Salute! That's a good thing. That means everybody's on the same page at the same time. That pretty much makes that happen. Now, Salute has been here since about April, and they spent about $35 million here at the hotel revamping this whole area, including Salute and some other areas, but in this round area. And there's 40,000 square foot for a restaurant and a bar. That, folks, is not what you'd call tiny. In fact, we're sitting on the patio right now, and the weather is, we couldn't have bought this weather any better than it is tonight. The temperature is perfect. There's no breeze whatsoever. The sun has gone down now where you can see across the street and the lights are all lit up and everything. It's really a beautiful atmosphere to take a look at. And here at the table where we are with our invited guests, a little Prosecco is in charge. And Prosecco, in case you don't know it, I want to tell you a little bit about Prosecco, okay? Because I don't know why, but a lot of people don't know it. If you're going to pick a sparkling wine or a champagne, and let me talk a little bit about champagne and then sparkling wine and then Prosecco. So it's all bubbly, but champagne, as you probably know, only comes from one area in the whole world, and that is Champagne, France. That's a region that's in the northeast part of France, about 93 miles northeast of Paris, and they're only allowed to grow by French law three different grapes. They can't grow anything else, and they can't water anytime, anywhere. If Mother Nature doesn't throw wine water down on the grapes, then you don't get much wine. And the three grapes, just so that you know, are Pinot Meunier, Pinot Noir, and Chardonnay. Those three grapes make what we typically call champagne. Doesn't have to be those three grapes, but in champagne, it's the only three grapes, and any combination is fine. They could have 100% Chardonnay, 100% Pinot Noir, or any combination they want, but they can't use any other grape. Now, the rest of the world, when it comes to sparkling wine, because the only place in the world you can call champagne is in Champagne. That's the little region I just talked about. Any bubbly from anywhere else cannot be called champagne, according to the law. Well, back in the late 1800s, the French were tired of people all around the world making a product and calling it champagne when it really wasn't, because it wasn't made in Champagne. And so they called a meeting and asked all the people and the winemakers and winery owners from around the world to come to France. And in effect, they had a meeting saying, look, we don't want you to use the word champagne anymore. We want you to use anything else. And so there wasn't anybody there that disagreed with it. Everybody signed a petition saying they would no longer call that bubbly champagne. Guess who wasn't invited, folks? U.S. of A. America was not invited because at that time we weren't making sparkling wine and nobody thought that we'd ever be making it. So why the heck bother having them come over and agree to something that isn't going to be necessary? Well, guess what? That all changed. So here we are, a country that doesn't have an agreement not to use the word champagne. But we also have a company with a little bit of ethics. And so what they've done, in effect, as in California in particular, is that they say if here in California or there in California, if you want to make a sparkling wine and you want to call it champagne, no problem. But you must preface it by the state with which it is in. So it would be called California champagne as opposed to champagne. So that makes it legal from our standpoint. That makes us happy. And from the French standpoint, they don't have any argument. So we've been going that way for a long time. Now, if they do this in Oregon, it's going to be called Oregon Champagne if they want to use it. Back in the 1970s, when this all kind of came to fruition, there were a lot of wineries that were making bubbly and calling it champagne. And so they all started using the state with which they were in. Well, by today's standards, hardly any winery uses the word champagne anymore. It's kind of passé, and they've left it for the firm, if you know what I mean. So you might see in the store bubbly or sparkling wine, or if you're in Spain, they don't call it sparkling wine. They call it cava, C-A-V-A, cava. So that's their answer to sparkling wine. So any of those is fine, and whatever works for you is a good thing. Now, the problem that the French have is the fact that they are so particular about who's using the word champagne, and there's the demand for champagne. Some people think, you know, if it's not champagne, it's not good. So the price has gone up. And what you find is champagne is usually $10, $15, $20, $25 per bottle more expensive than its competitor of bubbly coming from, let's say, California or Spain or somewhere else. So don't be surprised if champagne has a higher price tag. It's just economics, folks. They think the product is worth more money, and therefore they charge more. That's okay. In blind tastings, it hasn't worked out that way. In fact, hasn't worked out that way very well for the French. So there's a lot of great bubbly produced in America and in Spain and Australia and other places that is equal to or better than the tastings, blind tastings I'm talking about, coming out of Champagne, France. So incidentally, there are other wineries in France that are making bubbly. And when they're not in the actual region of Champagne, they cannot call their product Champagne either. They have to call it sparkling wine or some other name that they come up with. So it's kind of weird. So here we have, you can go to your retail store and you could find a product that's made in Spain. I'm sorry, in France, made in Champagne and not called Champagne. Pretty wild, huh? So now you know why that's that way. It's just strictly the French law. And I mentioned earlier, and I'll mention it again because I think it's pretty unique, and that is if it doesn't rain in Champagne, the grapes get no moisture. That is very, very, very significant when it comes to trying to make great grapes in order to make a champagne or any kind of a bubbly. So there are years that the rain didn't happen too well, and you will hear people comment, a champagne, and I'll just say 1984 was not a good year. That's why they're saying it was not a good year. It's not the whole world. It's only Champagne, France, and it just simply means to you and me that there wasn't much rain that year. Therefore, the product didn't turn out to be as good as it could have been. That makes sense? Okay, let's go to sparkling wine real quick before we have to go to another break. And that is the sparkling wine is exactly the same kind of a product as you find with champagne in Champagne, France. However, it's in almost anywhere else. And let's just pick Spain as an alternative. They're making a bubbly in Spain, but they don't have to use Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay. They could use any one of those three if they wanted, or all three if they chose to. But they could also use any other varietal. And in many countries, like in America, we make a bubbly that's made from Zinfandel, one of the popular grapes in America. And the Zinfandel bubbly is actually a pretty good product and has been very competitive when it comes to blind tastings with other countries around the world. So then, of course, the third and final item is not bubbly and it's not champagne. It's just wet. If it has a little bit of effervescence, it can be called bubbly, or it could be called sparkling wine, or it could be called anything but champagne, unless, of course, it was made in the county of Champagne. Does that make sense to you? Okay, good. So the Prosecco now is a specific grape, which I mentioned to you a little bit earlier, that they make a sparkling wine out of. They call it Prosecco as opposed to bubbly. And it is one grape called Glera, G-L-E-R-A, and that's what we're tasting this evening. Rufino is the winery in Italy that's produced this this product, and it retails for about $16 a bottle, what you're drinking right now. Now let's talk real quick about pairing, because the chef has paired some food to go along with it, which will be out here shortly. And that is, he's taken some calamari, which most everybody loves, a little calamari with some cherry peppers and a little bit of marinara sauce, and cooked that all together. And let me tell you, when you take a taste of it and then a little sip of your bubbly, you're going to understand what pairing is all about. That's what we like to do here on Wines du Jour, is to pair food and wine. To me, that's one of the things that don't seem to work out the way it should, so to speak, because there's so many people that don't know what kind of wine goes with what kind of food, and therefore they just sit around and eat whatever's put on their plate, if you know what I'm saying. But here we're talking about a little calamari with some cherry peppers and a little marinara sauce to go with the bubbly. I think that's a pretty good thing. I want to tell you a little bit about the bubbly. It is a non-vintage product. Do you know what non-vintage means? Non-vintage just simply means that there is no particular year that the juice that's in that bottle was done. In other words, it's not 1999 or 2014. It could be 2014, 2013, 2015, a little bit of each, based on what the winemaker wanted to do. So they call that non-vintage, and of course it's called Prosecco in this particular case. So that's pretty good, I think, anyway. It's kind of crisp, it's kind of clean, it has a pleasant aftertaste to it. The calamari is very, very tasty. Prosecco matches also very well with things like pizza. So if you are going to have some pizza and you don't know what to have, try a little Prosecco. You would be pleasantly surprised. Along with maybe a little bit of shellfish and maybe a little bit of white meat. That could be chicken or it could be any type of white meat. Pheasant, quail, dove, duck, whatever, goes really well with Prosecco. It's amazing if you will buy some Prosecco, keep it chilled, and open it up when you want to have an aperitif, or if you're going to make something to have before dinner, Prosecco is a great item to put along with it. So keep that in mind. Okay. So the good part is Prosecco should be around what temperature? Well, we like our sparkling wine and our champagne around 36 degrees. We know that when you put it in your refrigerator for a day or two, the refrigerator is about 39 degrees. So it's a little bit warmer in your refrigerator than we'd like to have the sparkling wine. So what we typically would do is take a bucket, fill it half full of ice and half full of water, and then put that Prosecco right in the mixture. We call that a slush. Put it right in the mixture and give it at least 20 to 30 minutes, and it will be, believe it or not, exactly 36 degrees. That's the way it works. Now, please understand that when you open the bottle and pour some in a glass, 36 degrees is no longer. It's warmer than that, and that's not a bad thing either. We talk about 36, but we don't talk about drinking at 36. We talk about pouring it at 36, so it'll be a little bit warmer when we taste it. Because remember, the colder the product, the less you can taste it. So cold champagne for a lot of money is a waste of money. It doesn't really do you any good. So we got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Prosecco. And then a little bit more about, let's say Tuscany, Italy. That's where this came from. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back coast to coast and around the world on the Internet right here on Wines du Jour at Salute in Las Vegas. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. Boy, this Prosecco and this Calamari are tasting pretty doggone good together. I just wanted to mention a couple things about Prosecco being a bubbly, as I call it. And I told you what grape that it comes from. But what really happens is the color of the grape, when they process it to make the wine, is kind of a bright yellow color. So it's a little bit different than most sparkling wines. Along with the bubbles are really small. And incidentally, if you want to test a bubbly of any brand, whether it's champagne or not, the way to know if it's good is to take a look at the bubbles. The smaller the bubbles, the better the quality. That's an automatic thing. It's not something that they choose. This is very intensely fruity. I think this Prosecco is very, very nice. It has a lot of apples and pears and things of that nature going on in it, and goes very well with the calamari. Now, the chef, I guess, forgot the marinara sauce with the calamari, and that's not a bad thing. Oh, some people had it? Oh, okay. Well, that's just me. But the whole thing I'm getting at is that the marinara sauce is an added feature, but not a requirement, because calamari by itself, when it's cooked properly, and cooked properly means not overcooked, because it gets tough. When you cook it well done, it's tough. If it was a steak, it would be medium rare. I know that sounds a little cruel to some people when they think of calamari and not having it well done, but I have to tell you, you want it to taste good, that's the way it needs to be. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The peaches, I think, are very tasty in this Prosecco. I happen to like that peachiness to it. The fact that you have the bubbles and so on just add to the effervescence, if you will, on the taste. You put a little bit of it in your mouth, and it just kind of jumps around a little bit, if you know what I'm saying. And so for about $16, that's an awful lot of bonus as far as I can see. So the quality of the product is very good. It's very well chilled here at Salute. They did a good job at that. And then at the same time, by allowing it to have a little floral aromas, some fruitiness, some nectarine and so on, all those things just kind of make the overall product pretty doggone good. Okay, let's go on now to wine number two, which they're going to be pouring here shortly. And wine number two is one of the most popular white wines in all of Italy. I should say Italy, not Idlia. In Italy, it's called Pinot Grigio. It's also one of the more popular white wines in America. I think every Italian restaurant probably sells more Pinot Grigio as a white wine in their restaurant than any other kind. Even though they might have some different ones on their wine list. But Pinot Grigio is, I think, a very, very tasty and nice varietal. It's also kind of a straw yellow color, if you look at it in the daylight. It shows some flowers, some pears, a little bit of a golden apple, and it's medium-bodied in its texture. So it'll go very well. And what the chef has done is taken Santa Margherita pizza, and he's going to pair that with this beautiful Pinot Grigio. And I think you're going to find that's pretty interesting. Now, I want to mention something about pizza. I'm sure everybody is fully aware that the best pizza in the world and originally came from Naples, or we call it Napoli-Dama area. The Naples area, that's where pizza was invented. And that they still get credit for it, and there's still three pizzerias in that area that get credit for being the ones that come out with it. And, of course, the very first pizza was called Santa Margherita. Santa Margherita, just very, very simply, is three colors. It would be red and green and white. It could be the cheese. It could be the green could be the flowers. And, of course, the other is automatic. So you've got a nice taste. You've got a little chill. It should be around 45 to 50 degrees as far as temperature is concerned. Did I get some?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. the fact that they call this this wine, not only Salute is the restaurant, But I've got to find my notes here because I want to talk about it, and I can't find it right off the bat. The tasting notes from the Prosecco, and here we are with the Pinot Grigio. Okay, here we are. This is what I wanted to talk to you about. The Lumina, that's what they call it, Lumina Pinot Grigio, offers a lot of apples, a little honeyed pear, citrus notes, along with a pleasant touch of minerality, and that's what I think makes this taste really, really good. It's well balanced, it's crisp, it's got a lot of acidity, and it's got a satisfying finish. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk about what goes with Pinot Grigio here at Salute. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're having a good time here, and I have to tell you, the 2014 Ruffino Lumina Pinot Grigio is absolutely tasty, and that's what we're drinking right now. For those of you that asked during the break, what's the percentage of alcohol, because I talk about it quite a bit each week on the wines, and this particular Pinot Grigio is just 12%, so that's a good thing, and you can buy it retail at most wine stores for about $12.99 a bottle. Very, very nice as far as prices, good quality, and it goes very well with a number of different things. It has that golden apple, a honey pear that I mentioned a little bit earlier that is really good with Pinot Grigio, and I think it goes very well with the food. Now, the Santa Margherita pizza will be out here shortly. And when you have an opportunity to taste something that's a little bit dry, but not too dry in terms of wine, along with the bold flavor of the Santa Margherita, you're going to find that the two go together very, very well. The name Lumina. Now, if you're Italian, you already know it means elimination of the moon. Elimination of the moon. That's what Lumina means, just so that you know. That just means that when the moon is half up, Lumina. Who cares? You know what I mean? But the Prosecco is going to be good, and the Pinot Grigio is going to be even better. So I don't know what else I can tell you there. It's delicious with prosciutto. I'm just talking about the Pinot Grigio now. It goes really well as an aperitif. It goes really well with prosciutto, as well as mild cheeses. There's several different mild cheeses that you could choose. It goes well with fresh salad. It goes well with pasta and cream sauces. And it also pairs well with seafood, shellfish, white meat, and Asian dishes. Boy, that's pretty versatile. So that's a good thing, and I like that idea. Now, I mentioned earlier about Tuscany. Now, if you know Italy at all, you know that Tuscany is in the northwest part of Italy, and it's a big area. In that Tuscany area is something called Chianti. Now, Chianti is the next wine and third and final wine that we're going to have this evening. But I just want to mention that Chianti is not a grape. Chianti is a town. And in the town, there are a number of wineries. In Chianti, Italy, there's, my guess is, around 48 or 50 wineries, and each one of them make a Chianti. The basic grape and the majority of the juice is always Sangiovese. And then the individual part from there on is kind of up depending on the individual winery, what they want to do. And that's what gives you, the consumer, a little bit of taste difference between one or the other. So Chianti is not the grape. Chianti is the name of the town where the wineries are located in the Tuscany region. I guess that's good enough. Anybody have any questions about that? Now, the fermentation for the Pinot Grigio takes place in temperature-controlled stainless steel tanks. That's the way they do this in Italy. And I say stainless steel tanks. They also have concrete tanks. And that's something that's becoming around the world much more popular than you would imagine. Most people never heard of concrete tanks, but they're finding out that concrete is a pretty good thing to allow wine to kind of mellow out, if you will. So whether they use stainless steel tank or concrete tank, or maybe a little bit of both, they might put some of the juice in there for 4 or 5 months and then take it out and transfer it to a concrete tank for maybe 2 or 3 more months. That's kind of an interesting thing, and I have to tell you that it makes the wines taste really, really good. It's not brand new. They've been doing it for probably 10, 12 years, but most people haven't really got caught up on that concept yet. So now you know that you can definitely age or ferment wine not only in stainless steel tanks but also in concrete tanks. That's kind of an interesting thing, I think. Now, as an aperitif, now Pinot Grigio goes really well as an aperitif. You can do bruschetta, cremini. You can do a lot of different things to serve with the Pinot Grigio. But remember that the Pinot Grigio should not be overly chilled. It should be around 45 or so degrees and not 36 right out of your refrigerator. That makes sense, I hope. Okay, the Santa Margherita, I mean, how bad is that? You know, you've got fresh basil, you've got fresh tomato sauce, and some mozzarella cheese. That's what the Santa Margherita pizza is all about. You can make that at home. You can buy it at any pizza place. I just have to tell you, you should, wherever you live, you should search out and find out who makes the best pizza. And let me tell you a couple things that need to happen in order to make the best pizza. Number one, you must have more than just all-purpose flour. That's what most people use, and that's the mistake. All-purpose flour does not taste good as a pizza. It just doesn't work well. So you end up looking for a double zero flour in the store, and that's available in almost any store, or at least cake flour as a flour to use as opposed to all-purpose. Got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that because I think that's interesting. But pizza is something that is very, very popular, and if it's done right, it's very, very tasty. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're having a good time here at Salute. Salute is a very nice Italian restaurant here at the Red Rock Resort. If you have not been here before, well, first of all, shame on you. And second of all, get your fanny over here and try the food. Man, their lunches and their dinners are incomparable. If you like Italian cuisine, and I mean authentic Italian cuisine, this is the place to come. Now, when I say authentic, what happens? A lot of people, they have no clue what that means. Authentic means real, I guess, is another word for it. But if you've never been to Italy, or if you've never tasted quote-unquote authentic Italian cuisine, what I'm saying doesn't mean a thing. You know, I don't know about you, but I grew up in Ohio. And in Ohio, I don't think the average person has a clue, although there are a lot of Italians, what some of this Italian cuisine is all about. It's so commercial, it's not even funny. And that's what I'm talking about, the difference between commercial or not. And one of the things, and we're going to get into this next week, incidentally, if you have an opportunity to either come to the show or listen, is olive oil. We have an expert coming as a guest next week to talk about her olive oil. And I'm going to tell you more information about olive oil than you ever wanted to know, but I can make a big difference in the taste and quality of the food that you serve. Let me just make a strong statement, and then I'll go off to a different area. A number of years ago, the man that's in charge of extra virgin olive oil, virgin olive oil, regular olive oil, and so on in Italy came to UNLV here in Las Vegas, and they invited 9 chefs here in town. I was luckily one of those that was invited to a week-long class about Italian olive oil. And the good thing is this, and let me just tell you real quick, start out with nine of us, the first thing that the instructor said in his broken English is that I want you to taste these five olive oils. I bought them at the store down the street, and then tell me what you taste. Now, I don't know about you, but as a chef, I have never, ever, up to that point, been asked to tell what I'm tasting when it comes to olive oil. Wine, we do it all the time. Olive oil, never have asked that question. So all nine of us were kind of concerned about what to say or what not to say. So anyway, we spent the few minutes putting down what we thought as far as the taste is concerned. And the instructor said, now, I told you earlier I bought all five of these at the store down the street. We're talking about from UNLV in that area. Well, it's spelled V-O-N-S. I don't know what the actual name of this of the grocery store is. But that's where he bought the five. He says, all five of these olive oils are rancid. Now, we just finished tasting it and writing about it, and he's telling us they're all rancid. So we said, what do you mean rancid? Is it going to make us sick? He said, no, it won't make you sick at all. But I have to tell you, it doesn't taste like olive oil at all. And you don't know the difference. Why? You grew up tasting rancid olive oil. You and I and your mother and your grandmother and whoever else has been using rancid olive oil as extra virgin olive oil. And that's a shame, but that's the way it is. So then he brought out some olive oil he brought from Italy. Wow. I mean, to tell you, you have to be brain dead not to know the difference. There's a world of difference with good quality. And here's what I'm trying to say in essence. Number one, the extra virgin olive oil, and that's what I use all the time, not virgin or regular or whatever. I only use extra virgin. And that's what he suggested also is that the taste is far different if it's fresh than if it's the type that you buy in the store. So if you're going to buy olive oil in a store, and listen next week and we'll talk about that in detail, if you're going to buy olive oil in a store, make sure you buy it from a store that sells a lot of olive oil. So there's a turnover. Let me tell you why. It's going to shock you. 6 to 8 months from the time the olive oil is put in the bottle, it becomes rancid. 6 to 8 months. Now, I'm not going to ask you how many years you've had some of those big cans of olive oil in your pantry, but there are a number of people that have done that. And you might as well just throw it away and start over. That's just rancid olive oil. It's not going to make you sick. Please don't misunderstand me, but it sure has a lousy taste. But you and I are used to that because that's what we've been eating all of our life. So check out some fresh olive oil. And come to the show next week, you're going to be able to do that. But also find out where you can go to get olive oil that you would want to take home. It doesn't have to be $50 a bottle to be good, not at all. But it has to be fresh. And fresh is the toughest part because of where we're located. Getting it from Italy or Spain or wherever to Las Vegas or wherever you live is a whole different program. So keep that in mind and pay attention next week, if you will, and you'll discover something that works really well with food. Now, Chianti, which is what we are tasting as we speak, they should be pouring it, aren't they?
Not yet.
Not yet? Oh, they're about to start pouring it. In fact, they better start pouring it. We're going to be running out of time. But Chianti is, as I mentioned earlier, a town in Tuscany, Italy. It is not a grape. Chianti wine is not made from Chianti grapes. That's not the way it works. Chianti is a town, and the grape juice that's used 90% or more in all Chianti is Sangiovese, one of my favorite red wines. It's a good one. They grow a lot of it around the Chianti Tuscany region, which is above some of the areas that you're used to seeing in Italy. So if you don't know about it, now you do. And if you haven't tried it, I hope that you do. Go to your store, check out ask them how old this is. If there's a date, that's going to give you some indication, but chances there is no date. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about olive balls. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're on our final steps with our third wine this evening, which is the Chianti that I talked about before we went to the break. Chianti is a very popular wine, available obviously in almost every Italian restaurant, and a lot of people like it because it's not too heavy. It's made from Sangiovese grape, as I mentioned earlier, as opposed to Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot or what have you. But it's not uncommon to take Sangiovese and add to that a little Cabernet Sauvignon and a little Merlot and simply call that Chianti. And that's okay. It's tasty and it's very food friendly. And that's truly what it's all about. The Tuscany region is where most of the Chianti comes from. Chianti is a town in Tuscany. If you can think of Tuscany as a county or a region, and then in that region there's a town called Chianti, and then around the Chianti town there are about 108 different wineries, and they all make Chianti, okay, just so that you're not confused about Chianti being something different than what it really is. The percentage of alcohol, incidentally, in this Chianti is about 13%. Very low, actually, by comparison. We like it all the way up to and including 14.5. So we're down to 13. That's good. And the price is about, believe it or not, about $12 a bottle. It's available in retail stores all across the country. And Ruffino is it. The 2012 is the vintage, and that means the grapes were grown in 2012, and then they made the wine from that juice. There's some nice hints of plum with this Chianti, which I happen to like, with some freshness, making it very pleasant and easy to drink, with a lingering fruity finish. That's what I like to think about. So it goes well with food, but it's also nice by itself. And that just simply means that when you swallow the wine, you're going to be able to taste it for a few seconds longer. And that's what we refer to affectionately as a long, lingering finish. Pretty cool, huh? Chianti is can be perfectly matched with widely varietal of Tuscany, a lot of different Italian dishes. And that's really what we're talking about. Now, the chef here tonight has come up with, I thought, a pretty good idea. He's taken what he calls crispy avanzini. That's what he calls this combination. And what it is, it's four cheese and risotto balls. You've got cheese balls with risotto, along with a little bolognese sauce. A bolognese sauce is a meat sauce, in case you don't know that. And so the two together ought to really put a nice taste in your mouth to go along with the flavor of Chianti. So I think we've got ourselves a hit, if you know what I'm saying. I don't know what time it is, only because I haven't looked. But we have a couple minutes before we have to go, and I just want to go over a little bit about what we've done to this evening. We talked about the Prosecco, about $16 a bottle, and it retails about 11% alcohol, not real heavy in alcohol, but very, very tasty and very food-friendly. The other one is a 2014 Pinot Grigio Lumina. Remember, that's the moon thing. Retail about $12.99, not expensive at all, very tasty and food-friendly. And last but not least, the Ruffino Chianti, coming to us from the Chianti region in Tuscany. And that's where the wine was actually made. So that's a good thing. I want to thank you for listening to Wines du Jour, Food and Wine, here at Salute Trattoria Italia at the Red Rock Resort. We're America's number one syndicated wine and food show, and we broadcast each week at this very same time and this very same station. So you can also go to leskincaid.com